for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're with Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know what I think we should all, I think we should all get hoodies and send them to Don Lemon at CNN so that he could put the hoodie on and then put a suit jacket on over it. You recall he did that. Welcome aboard, folks. Steve Malzberg. It is 10:04 here on the East Coast of the United States on Wednesday night. Boy, is this week flying by. And you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show. Joining me, because there's so much to talk about, the Fed rate hike today, the banks, the state of the economy, the Biden administration reaction, and not the least of the news, Donald Trump, will he be or will he not be indicted, is Stephen Moore, former economic advisor to President Donald Trump, and he's the senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks. Check out freedomworks.org. Stephen, hello, my friend.
So great to be with you.
Well, you know it's always great to talk to you. Okay, let me start with the announcement by the Fed Chairman Powell of a 0.25% interest rate hike. It's the ninth straight time that they have had the opportunity and have raised rates. Were you expecting this or more, or how do you interpret what was done today?
Well, Steve, I think most analysts were expecting this 0.25% increase in the Fed funds rate. This is amazing because, as you said, this is the ninth increase in the rates. They're up by now, they were about 0.5% when Trump left office. Now they're at 5%. So that's a gigantic increase in interest rates. And this really explains why so many banks are having trouble, Steve, because they're holding 10-year and 30-year government bonds. But when the interest rates rise, that reduces the value of the bonds, and it's put the balance sheets of many of these banks in considerable financial stress. Now, I think fundamentally the banking system is sound in the United States, but I do think there may be some more dominoes to fall as we adjust to this new higher interest rate policy that the Fed has put into effect. To go from 0.5 to 5% on interest rates in just 14 months. That's pretty quick.
That is very, very quick. Now, one thing that Powell said, and he noted a connection, if I was hearing correctly, between the tighter financial conditions caused by the banks and lending decisions, et cetera, and it could have a similar impact as inflation. But he also predicted that we're going to see by the end of this year a 4.5 rate of unemployment, and that'll extend into January into 2024, where he said at the end of 2024 we'll see a 4.6 rate of unemployment. How much of a concern is that?
I don't think the Fed is very good at predicting where these things are going. Remember, this is the same Federal Reserve who a year ago said that inflation was going to be transitory, and it turned out to be non-transitory inflation because we still have inflation at over 6% in the United States. So, look, I think the current state of the economy right now is in a precarious, dangerous situation. And it all circles back to the trillions and trillions of dollars that Joe Biden so irresponsibly spent and borrowed, in his first 2 years in office, as some $6 trillion. Our national debt is now headed to $50 trillion in the next 10 years. These are just ungodly, awful numbers. And, Joe Biden's latest budget that just came out a week or two ago calls for trillions of dollars of new spending. So until I think almost all of the problems in the United States are directly attributable to an out-of-control and financially reckless fiscal policy from this administration.
Well, it's interesting because I'll just play you a very short soundbite of what Karine Jean-Pierre said today, speaking for the president, when asked about the state of the economy. Here's cut 273.
We do not see a recession or a pre-recession. We see a strong economy, and it's because of the work that this president has done.
Just as you might expect, it's because the economy is strong, and it's all because of Biden.
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot to say here. And you know, that's what any presidential spokeswoman would say about the any president, you know, oh, things are just fine. I wish it were true, and it might turn out to be true, but I don't think so. I mean, I think, first of all, the average family in the United States has lost about $3,000 to $4,000 in purchasing power in the 2 years that Biden has been in office. So Biden is making Americans poorer, not richer. When he came into office, the economy was just prepped for a big boom because COVID was coming to an end. In fact, in Trump's last 6 months in office, the economy grew by 11%. It is true we have a very strong labor market right now in the United States. There are 10 million job openings and only 5 million unemployed people. So that is a good situation for people who are looking for jobs. But the wages and are just not keeping pace with the higher prices of everything. And as I said, that's really putting the average middle class families under great financial stress right now.
Well, let me ask you, because I heard two sound bites today regarding FDIC insurance when it comes to the banks. And we saw the collapse of the SVB bank, and all deposits were guaranteed by the federal government. And of course, right. You always hear the FDIC only insures up to $250,000. So they made an exception in that case. I heard the Chairman Powell today say that all deposits are safe and secure. All. And I heard Janet Yellen the other day say she wasn't going to comment on any deposits over $250,000 being safe and insured. So where are we right now? If more banks fail, God forbid, are they all deposits going to be saved again and covered again? And how long could that go on without doing some damage?
They're all very good questions. I don't know if they're really good answers. I don't think anybody knows for sure the answer to those questions, Steve. You know, we're turning into bailout nation again, where, you know, we're just bailing out anybody who's adversely affected by some of the bad business decisions that some of these banks have made. I happen to think it's a mistake to provide the government safety net for people with $250,000 or more in a safety, you know, a savings account. I mean, how many middle-class people have more than $250,000 in a savings account? Not many, if any, at all. Probably zero do. So this is a big bailout of rich people, and it's ironic, Steve, because just a week and a half ago, Joe Biden was running around the country saying, we're going to really stick it to the rich, and we're going to raise their taxes through the roof, and the joke in Washington now is, yeah, Biden has to raise taxes on the rich so he can hand out the money to the rich and, you know, who lost money in this banking crisis. So I find it troubling. There's a term in economics called a moral hazard, and a moral hazard happens when you encourage the same kind of bad behavior you're trying to get rid of. And so we want investors and depositors to be cognizant of how the bank is being operated. And, you know, the more we bail them out, the more likely it is banks will take and make risky decisions. So we have right now, in my opinion, Steve, this kind of incestuous relationship between big business, big banks, and big government. And the guy who gets screwed is the little guy on the street, on Main Street USA.
Is it a good thing that, you know, with First Republic and I don't know where that's going to wind up, and I'm sure you may know, I certainly don't, but that other banks have kind of come to the rescue of First Republic? And do you see if more banks wind up in that situation, that again, the banking industry itself will be able to, in effect, bail that bank out and save it by taking it over or contributing as a group, maybe even to save the banks that are struggling or failing?
I'd rather have the banks doing that than the taxpayers doing it. So if it were choice between whether the taxpayers should give them money or the banks should to keep the system from, you know, having a contamination effect, then I'm in favor of the banks doing it. Look, the big banks in America, you know, we have four mega banks, including Citibank, we have JP Morgan, we have Wells Fargo. Those banks have hundreds of billions of dollars of assets. So they're in no risk of, of failing, you know, unless we had a really 1929 type of crash in the stock market. So I do think overall the banking system is going to be fine. But I also think, Steve, you're going to see some more dominoes fall. I think you will see some more bank failures. And it's not just the fact that interest rates have risen so much, but it's also right. that a lot of these banks have become really involved in ESG, and you know, this is a, you know, social justice issues and saving the planet from climate change and things that have taken their eye off the ball, which is to make money for their investors.
Well, that's another issue, because the president just vetoed the ban okay. on that. I've heard several studies referenced in recent days since the president was going to do it and since he did it, that show that those kinds of investments have returned less. The politically correct, if you will, investments right. have returned less over the recent years. And that's why people are objecting to it, not to limit and tie the hands of these brokers and investors who handle 401ks and whatnot, but not to make them do it, because it's a losing proposition.
Exactly right. So, you know, the problem with these socially conscious, environmentally conscious investing ideas. And look, if an individual wants to do that themselves, it's a free country. You can invest in anything you want to. The problem is these are fiduciaries at these money management funds, and their job is to get the best deal for the investors that they can. And they're not doing that. They're being diverted into investing in, you know, windmill companies and, you know, social, you know, racial justice causes and things. And as you said, that means that people who've invested their money, and these are mom and pop investors who have their whole retirement savings in these accounts, and now they're getting less of a return. And that means, you know, they're going to have a smaller nest egg when they retire. And I got to tell you, people get very angry when they hear that, and they should. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, to invest your own money the way you want to, but when you're investing other people's money and they don't even tell them about it. So yeah. I think this is something that's going to be really problematic for the investment banks, and shame on, you know, for Joe Biden for saying, oh yeah, you should take into account these environmental issues. No, that's playing politics with people's pensions.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It just runs counter to everything that you would think that Uncle Joe would stand for. We're talking to Stephen Moore, former economic advisor to President Donald Trump, senior economic contributor to freedomworks.org. So let me ask you, when the train crashed in Ohio, Palestine, Ohio, it was Trump's fault. And when the bank, when SVB went under, it was Trump's fault, or at least what happened during his term, because of what they said was the weakening of the Dodd-Frank rules.
Yeah.
You don't buy that, or do you?
Oh, look, the economy was in very strong shape. I mean, I'm a little biased because I did work for Donald Trump as one of his senior economic advisors, but you know, we left the economy in great shape. It was really, you know, once we had the vaccine and we're ready to reopen our businesses. I mean, this is my frustration, Steve, is the U.S. economy should be booming today. And if Trump were still president, I believe we wouldn't be talking about any kind of recession. We wouldn't be talking about 6-8% inflation. We wouldn't be talking about, you know, being reliant on OPEC for energy. We wouldn't be talking about an out of control border. These are crises that Joe Biden created himself. And so, you know, when you hear the White House press secretary saying, you know, everything's great with the economy, I think a lot of people on Main Street USA outside the Washington Beltway say, what is she talking about? She has no idea of the financial stress that so many American families are feeling right now. And so I just get frustrated because, you know, the policies of, you know, reducing taxes and reducing regulation and putting America first really had a very positive impact.
Yeah. And you know what gets me, Stephen? Tell me if I'm wrong, but when I hear how many jobs Joe Biden created in his first 2 years, isn't that as much? I mean, before the pandemic, a job creation, unemployment record lows for every demographic, job creation record highs, everything was going right. along wonderfully. And of course, the jobs went away with COVID. And now they're counting all the jobs that have come back as Biden created them. Am I getting that right or not?
Summary. I mean, you know, we've had, we're still about 3 or 4 million, you know, workers missing. In other words, you know, if we just had the same percentage of Americans of every age group working that we did pre-COVID, we would, because in the United States right now, we have a problem of a shortage of workers, not a shortage of jobs. And so, everybody, all these employers are asking, what happened to other workers? And the big problem, in my opinion, is that we're paying people not to work in Washington. You know, you can make, we just did a study at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. We found people could make 70, 80, even in some states, up to $100,000 a couple and not work a single hour. And so that's holding people out of the workforce. And you've got people now for over 3 years that haven't worked, you know, because that's when COVID first hit back in early March of 2020. So we've got to get Americans back to work. We all believe in a safety net. But with that safety net, you need to have work requirements that keep people back on their feet.
All right, one more for you, Stephen. Thanks for being generous with your time. Okay, so the Fed chair indicated that there might be a pause coming. The stock market reacted to the increase and those comments and all the comments by falling. Just about all the indexes fell about 1.6% today, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P. Do you believe that they might take a pause? And where do you believe the market or the markets may be heading?
If I knew the answer to that question, I'd be in Tahiti right now. So, you know, I don't think anybody knows where the market is headed. But, you know, I think that the Fed, you know, a lot of people thought the Fed was done raising interest rates. It looked like at the end of last year that we had conquered the worst of inflation, but then it came back a little bit. So I think a lot of your question really depends on what happens to prices. Hopefully we'll see, you know, inflation. Remember, the target rate for inflation that the Fed has is 2%. Well, we have 6% inflation. So there's still a long way from two, you know, from 6 to 2, that's a long way to go. So yeah. I don't think they're done. And again, I'd say the most important thing to bring down the inflation rate is to really take a machete to the federal government and in terms of you know, cutting government spending programs that we don't need, and then that would suck some of the money out of the economy and bring inflation down.
Yeah. All right. Well, Steve, listen, I said one question, but just let me ask you, what do you think of this whole Donald Trump situation? Now we hear that the grand jury, that the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, may not have the votes on the grand jury to pursue the indictment. We have a report that hundreds of documents were withheld from the grand jury as evidence, exculpatory kind of evidence, and that's causing a ruckus within his own office. So this might not happen, or it might happen. But you know, you worked with the man, you know the man, and you were close to the man, and so I just want to get your take on everything that's going on and where we may be headed.
Well, you know, I don't know all about the case itself, but right. I'll say this, that, you know, there's been no president in any of our lifetimes, probably in American history, that has been more put under more abuse than Donald Trump. Let's not forget, the same people who want to indict him are the people who spent, remember, 2 years on the Russia collusion hoax. And that's all they talked about in the media for his first 2 years in office. Remember, Steve? Russia, you know, collusion. And there was no.
You Russia left out of Russia. It's Russia, Russia, Russia. You left out one Russia. Right. There's three of them.
Russia, Russia, Russia. And then, you know, there was the Steele dossier, which was all fabricated. And then, you know, the outrageous raid on his compound at Mar-a-Lago. And then the lying about the Hunter, you know, Biden, you know, laptop. Just lie after lie after lie. And they've got a lot of nerve to, you know, think that they can arrest Donald Trump. I think it would be so outrageous. I think it would almost guarantee that Donald Trump would be the next president. The American people would see the unfairness of this, and they would see that we are turning into a banana republic where we have the Biden administration arresting their political opponents. That's never happened before in America. So, you know, let me say one last thing. If Joe Biden had 1 ounce of class, he would just give a blanket pardon to Donald Trump. And, you know, if they want to move on, let's move on. Remember, it was Joe Biden. Remember his inauguration speech? I'm going to unify the country. Is this a way to unify the country?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we know the answer to that. And Joe Biden has said many things that you scratch your head about. Listen, Stephen, thank you, my friend. Thank you so much. And check out freedomworks.org, everybody, and check out Steve's great organization. Thank you. We'll speak again soon. Excellent responses from Steve, as usual. I've known him for so many years, and it's no wonder that that Donald Trump chose to have him as an economic advisor. And of course, Steve's good friend and my acquaintance, Larry Kudlow, who served in the administration. And, you know, boy, those were the days. Those were the days. Look what we got now. And shiver and shudder in fear, because that's where we are. All right, we're going to come back. We have a lot more to get to, and more on the Trump non-indictment so far, and the man who might be responsible for the non-indictment, which may be the way this whole thing turns out. We'll let you hear from him and more when we come back. I'm Steve Malzberg, right here on TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
What does human rights mean anyway? I have no idea. If I think about the last few years and the absolute audacity of the government in the last few years to come out on Human Rights Day and talk about human rights while having locked down and forced people into their homes, it is just so Monty Python-esque. It's just unbelievable. You know, I wonder if these people, these authorities, these illegitimate authorities, I wonder if they have any idea what irony is. Are they self-aware at all? I somehow don't think so. I mean, I think they just operate on autopilot. They just get lots and lots and lots of money to act. You know, they're just on a stage. And yet, there are so many people who still buy into the theater. And I'm so glad that I can be one of those people here on TNT who can see through the act, who can see the script.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming, keep coming, keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
Support childhood slavery and buy an electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told.
Lighting the fuse for freedom.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you back, Steve Malzberg. I want to, you know, we talk about Joe Biden, haven't heard from him in a while. I know he made a bunch of gaffes today, earlier today, which I'll hopefully have for you tomorrow. But I just want you to hear a couple of things. This might have been the beginning of the week or the weekend. He was on the lawn and he was just doing an impromptu, you know, little quick, not presser, but what do they call that when the reporters just shout questions at him? So somebody asked him, I'm going to play it for you, but they asked him about his family. Okay. And, you know, remember, he famously said he had never talked to his son, Hunter, about any of his business dealings. And now we have these revelations from the Republicans in the House of monies going to, what is it, four Biden family members, including the ex-wife of his deceased son, Beau, who then hooked up with and dated Hunter. You can't make this up. She got like $30,000 check. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. So anyway, so here is cut 232. Listen.
Any ration to House GOP's memo about your family dealings, sir? Any ration to House GOP's new memo about your family dealings, sir?
Family
dealings. Yes, you're revealing that Hunter Biden's business associate sent over $1 million to three of your family members. Any reaction to that report?
Not true.
Do you have any reaction to the Russian chat that took down the U.S. drone, Mr. President?
All right. So I wish you could see. He looked like a very old, very confused man. He's, you know, walked over the little shuffle that he has, walked over. He couldn't understand what the woman was saying. He said, looked at my family deals. And then she repeated the question and he said, not true. Well, of course it's true. I mean, what they're saying, that the monies that came in to these family members, they have documentation. So I don't think that's in question. I mean, I haven't heard anybody except Joe Biden say it's not true. So that's one. That's just one. And then he walked away. They're shouting at him, and he walked away again, looking like he didn't know where he was going. It's just so sad. It really is so sad. But it's more than sad. This man's the leader of the free world, supposedly. I believe he's the guy with the earpiece in the Oval Office while Obama's in the basement, which is what Obama said his third term would look like. Okay. Now here's Joe Biden. He two new national monuments. This is a couple of days ago. One of them in Nevada. Well, the problem is he can't pronounce the name. Duh. Here is cut 254.
First, I'm proud to use my authority under the Antiquities Act to establish the, and I want you to know it's a big deal, the Havanequa May. I'm having trouble. Thank you. I got it.
Havanequa? Havanequa? Like Cuba's Havana? Havanequa? It's spelled A-V-I-K-W-A. How's that Havanequa? It's Aviquame. Aviquame. Not Havanequa. It's like his wife addressing a Hispanic audience and saying, si se puede. Yes, we can. That's not, of course, that's wrong. Si se puede. P-W. Puede. Or calling Latinos, comparing them to tacos and mispronouncing bodega. I mean, again, you can't make this up. This is incompetence. This is insanity. But this is the Bidens. This is it. This is it. And, you know, nobody cares. When I say nobody cares, we don't have a media in this country. They don't tell the people, and only the people who listen to shows like this or happen to see it or, hate, you know, whatever, live, if it's brought, that or read about it somewhere or whatever on their own. Otherwise, never happened. How many times have you heard me say never happened? How many times have you heard me say you can't make this stuff up? That's because it never happened and you can't make this stuff up. Okay. Just always remember that. Now. Okay. So the grand jury was supposed to meet on Wednesday in Manhattan to hear from another witness, reportedly. They were told in the morning not to come in, or last night not to come in. Now there are reports they might come in tomorrow. There you are, a Monday, Wednesday, Thursday grand jury. There are reports they might come in tomorrow. But there are also reports out there that say the indictment is in trouble. That Alvin Bragg is having second thoughts, possibly, because he can't convince the grand jury, because he doesn't have enough votes on the grand jury to indict. And don't forget, you could indict a ham sandwich, like I said. And I'm not the one who said that, but like I repeated yesterday. That means you could indict anybody for anything, basically, because you're in charge. The defense team doesn't come in to cross-examine witnesses or facts or anything. You're just giving your side, and then you say it's the grand jury believes that there's reason, you know, to believe a crime might have been committed. If you can't get a grand jury to vote an indictment, you did. There's really nothing. But here's the thing: in New York, it's kind of weird because they allowed a witness to testify at the behest of Donald Trump's attorneys. I believe that's how it came about, or from the witness himself, Robert Costello. Robert Costello was an advisor to Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former attorney. Michael Cohen is the one making all these allegations. Donald Trump wanted me to pay off Stormy Daniels. I wrote the check. He paid me back. It was so that he wouldn't have his campaign infringed upon, so she wouldn't talk about an affair and ruin his chances to become president. Trump denies all this. Okay? I'm not sure what specifics took place, but he denies the premise. He denies the affair. He denies. Okay? So Michael Cohen and I think Stormy Daniels basically are the witnesses. Michael Cohen has testified before this grand jury, I think 30 times. So this Robert Costello calls up the DA's office and says, you need to put me there. You need to hear me. Now, I don't know why. I think there's a provision in New York, which is different from other states, that allow this kind of thing. That's why it did happen. So there must be. And this Robert Costello testified. And basically he told the jury, Michael Cohen is a liar. He went to jail. And to keep himself out of jail, he, Robert Costello, before said to him at the time, don't you have anything on Trump? Don't you have anything? And a suicidal Michael Cohen, according to Robert Costello, suicidal because of what was about to happen to him, that he'd have to go to jail, said, no, I don't have anything. And then he goes to jail and now he's out and now he has stuff on Trump that he didn't think of back then. So Robert Costello has all this testimony, which I'm going to let you hear how he described it to Tucker Carlson. But also there are reports, and our good friend Joe Hoft, I read it on his site, Gateway Pundit, that there were about 600 pages of evidence that have been withheld from the grand jury by the DA, Alvin Bragg. That's a report. I don't know if that's true, but that's a report. And that there's dissension within his office. So I don't know what's going on. And I don't know if this is going to come to fruition or not. But I do want you to hear this because this is very interesting. So on Monday, Robert Costello testified. And here he is Monday night, I believe, or maybe it was Tuesday, with Tucker. And he's talking about it. Here is cut 269.
I got my point across, although it was clear to me that the Manhattan DA's office did not want to get to the truth. I need to explain that a little bit. I called them up after I saw Michael Cohen on TV stating things that he said he was going to tell the grand jury and had told the grand jury that were contrary to what he told us when we first represented him in April of 2018. So I'm sitting at home watching these lies, and I said, I've got to do something about it. I don't represent Donald Trump, but I do stand for justice, and I think I have a legal obligation to inform both sides. So that's what I did. I had a ton of documents that I had prepared back in 2019 for the Department of Justice.
Okay. And again, because he was, you know, advising Michael Cohen back then. So here's more. I don't want to get in his way. I don't want to interrupt, but this is why he wanted to go to the grand jury. Cut 270.
Because Michael Cohen, in my opinion, was lying about just about everything. I specifically told them that there were two main points that I wanted to make clear. That Cohen had told us that when we first met him, that he was suicidal. Why is that important? Because when you're suicidal, thinking that that's the only way out of your legal mess, and you're presented with the following options, that you can cooperate against Donald Trump and provide information that would get you a get out of jail free card, and you respond to us, I do not have any information on Donald Trump. And he said it many times during that 2-hour meeting. I swear to God, Bob, I don't have anything on Donald Trump. And I had my law partner who knew Michael Cohen for 10 years on Columbia Grammar and Prep School here in Manhattan, because Cohen was on the board of directors.
Yeah.
And when I heard him say that he was suicidal the weekend before, standing on the roof of the Regency Hotel, I didn't know whether he was a drama queen or telling the truth. So I looked at my partner and he shook his head and nodded, I think he's telling the truth.
So you understand this. Michael Cohen was going to jail, according to Robert Costello. He was suicidal. And they asked him, Robert Cohen and the other attorney asked him, do you have anything you could trade on Donald Trump to cut a deal, to get out of jail so you don't have to do this? No. And they asked him several times, nothing. Nothing. So he gets out of jail, and here it is 2023, and all of a sudden, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he had me write a check to Stormy Daniels and blah, 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 and yeah, he broke the law. Well, where was that when you were going to commit suicide or suicidal and about to head to jail. And your attorneys were begging you for anything that you had on Trump. It just doesn't make sense. Here's 271.
Why is that important? Because when you're willing to give up your life in order to avoid these legal troubles, when they're insurmountable to you, and you're offered a way out, you say, all you have to do is cooperate on Donald Trump. Do you have anything on Donald Trump? And he says no repeatedly. I swear to God, Bob, I don't have anything. Then you know that you've got a guy who probably doesn't have anything. It's certainly easier to give up information on Donald Trump than it is to kill yourself.
Yeah. I would think so. I would think so. So this is what the grand jury heard. Although I'm not finished here. We have one more. This is Tucker Carlson on Fox with a question here to Robert Costello. Cut number 272.
If you were the DA, if you were a prosecutor and you were trying to be fair and honest and serve the law rather than a political agenda, you'd want to know that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I told them and told the grand jury today, I was deputy chief of the criminal division of the U.S. Attorneys for the Southern District. I said I wouldn't touch a witness like Michael Cohn for any amount of money. You simply cannot rely upon this guy. And tonight he was on another station denying that he waived the attorney-client privilege. Here it is. In writing, and that's his signature on the second page. So
that's unbelievable.
I guess he didn't know that, and the district attorney didn't know that. And I told them, Michael Cohn has been in your office 20 times and twice in the grand jury, and he forgot to tell you that he waived the attorney-client privilege 22 times? I mean, really, is this the kind of witness you want to ride to the finish line? Not in my book.
All right, so he testified before the grand jury twice, but he met with the DA over 20 times. I got that confused a little, but I did not get confused. The facts here, as presented by Robert Costello, so the grand jury heard this, okay, on Monday, and they were supposed to meet again Wednesday. Today they didn't. And are they going to meet tomorrow? So far, possibly. And what does this shake things up? Does this change things? If I'm on the grand jury, it certainly does. I mean, it's not like you're convicting. It's not like you're deciding he's guilty. It's not like it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. Like if you're in a jury during a trial, I guess there's a much lower standard, but really, how do you believe Michael Cohn? The whole case is based on Michael Cohn. How do you believe him? So that's kind of where we are. That's kind of where we are. Now, interesting, over on CNN, Ellie Honig, CNN legal analyst, very interesting. He had something to say about this. And you're hearing this more and more and more from these people on the left, too. Not the Scarboroughs. You're never going to hear from the Scarboroughs, but people who have a legal background and are, well, maybe Joe's a lawyer, I don't know, but people who are, I guess, willing to be a little bit honest. So here's what Honig had to say on CNN, cut 256.
Ellie, I have heard from others that this is essentially a crime that involves a paper trail.
Yeah.
And paperwork or paper trail crimes are very easy to prove. So you're saying it's going to be difficult, but wouldn't the bar be really low to prove that?
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Follow the trail?
I've heard that statement from, I think, a mutual friend of ours. It's easy to prove the paper crime if the person's name is on the paper. Here, the paper trail can show us exactly how this payment was made, exactly how Michael Cohen was reimbursed, and exactly how they booked it. But what I'd be shocked if the paperwork showed is a direct link to Donald Trump. If there's an email, a text, a memo, where Donald Trump says, yes, guys, do it this way, or I'd like you to do it this way, that's a smoking gun. But short of that, the paperwork's an important part of the story, but just saying it's a paper case, there's a paper trail, doesn't necessarily get you to the core issue of the defendant or the potential defendant's criminal liability.
Yep. That's where we are. He's being honest. That's another issue. I mean, the evidence is so flimsy. There's really nothing there. Now, we're going to skip 265 and hold that for a second. I want to go to 261. This, by the way, he said a mutual friend of ours. He said, I've heard that from a mutual friend of ours. You know who the mutual friend speculative is that it's Sonny, not her name, Sonny Hostin from The View. That's what the people are speculating. Anyway, that wouldn't surprise me that she would get something totally wrong. But here is the view now today on Wednesday thinking, hey, maybe we were duped by Donald Trump into thinking he'd be indicted. Because they've been very excited, just waiting, holding their breath collectively. Here's 261.
And I want to start this with this update. You know who is still at large.
He is.
Yes, he is.
He is. Yes. He hasn't been arrested.
No.
Like you predicted.
Well, you know, you kind of have to weigh it with all the other stuff he said. And you figure, well, you know, you said you won the election, you didn't win.
Good point.
You said they're coming to arrest you. They didn't arrest you.
I said that to Joy. Why would we start believing him now?
It's kind of crazy.
He manipulated everybody. We all rose to the occasion. The papers, everybody just went there.
So many people were excited.
He's a liar.
Yeah.
He's a liar.
Are you shocked?
No, it annoys me every time.
I know. I know.
You were
but
excited.
But you're very sherbety, and I just want to lick your shoulder.
I don't know why she wants to lick her shoulder. I don't know what that even means. But look, I don't know if Donald Trump is lying. He certainly might have been. He might have believed he was going to be indicted this week. I don't think he was lying about the fact that he was facing indictment or had been told he probably would be indicted. Because don't forget, people met the Secret Service reportedly met with the DA's office and worked out how it would all work if he's indicted. They put gates around the courthouse. They got riot cops ready to go if there are protests. So this isn't made up by Donald Trump. Totally. He might have said this week and not known when it was coming, if it was going to come. But it could have been this week. But to think that he lied about this whole thing. He never faced indictment. We know what's going on. We know there's a grand jury. We know that they're close to the end. We know that. I mean, this is just ridiculous. But that's look who I'm calling ridiculous. I mean, the day they're not ridiculous will be the news. Now, 267 is Howard Stern, who has admitted in the past that I don't know what happened to him over the years. I mean, he became, you know, most people get older, they become conservative. He's gotten older and become a big fat lib. And he's admitted that he watches MSNBC all day, but he's not happy with MSNBC when it comes to the Trump indictment situation. Here's 267.
I was watching MSNBC yesterday. They were going fucking berserk with, Trump potentially being arrested.
These indictment possibilities.
Oh my God. It's the same discussion over and over again. They go, it's very possible that President Trump will be indicted according to... First of all, Trump...
We don't know, but...
And then they all come on the air and they're all discussing whether or not Trump's going to be indicted. I go, you know what? Why don't you sit tight and wait and see instead of like
That's
speculating?
Right. You don't have to speculate. This is what my problem is with those news shows. They treat politics like sports. You know, when something like the Super Bowl is coming up, you have 2 weeks to discuss what's going to happen in the Super Bowl.
They got to fill 24 hours a day. They got plenty to do. But, you know, it's crazy. The thing I love is that, everyone is talking about Trump, Trump, Trump. And today he was, you know, yesterday was the day he was going to be arrested. But Trump is the one who said he was going to be arrested. And they all believe him that he was going to be arrested.
He drummed up the news again. I said, I guess people are happy because he's back and he's telling them what stories to cover.
You didn't know what's going on.
There you go. All right. One more before we go to the break. This is back to 265. This is MJ Lee from CNN to Corinne Jean-Pierre, the most unqualified White House spokesman ever. But it's okay because she's black and she's a lesbian. So it's okay that she's unqualified and awful. Guess what she's going to bring up here on a question about politics? Guess. Here's 265.
Totally different topic. Does President Biden believe that it is appropriate for a person who is indicted to run for office?
So, nice way to ask, MJ. Very clever. So,
I'm going to be, again, really careful for here from here as it relates to any upcoming elections. And specifically, I'm assuming you're talking about the 2024 election. I'm just not going to give any analysis, foresight, any type of kind of decision or thoughts on that, because we are covered by the Hatch Act. So not going to speak to politics, and I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay. She's not covered by the Hatch Act. That's number one. She speaks for Joe Biden, who is not subject to the Hatch Act, which would prohibit people from weighing in on a political election or situation. She is not covered by it. She keeps using that as an excuse. But the other day, like about a week ago, remember I played you a bite? She was asked about how she feels about Marianne Williamson entering the Democratic race against Joe Biden. She's the only other, you know, announced candidate on the Democrat side, and she has a reputation for being a little out there. And she giggled, Karine Jean-Pierre, and she said something about I don't have a crystal ball, and insinuating that Marianne Williamson looks into a crystal ball. So she didn't, and I said she didn't invoke the Hatch Act. She commented. What's going on? Well, now she's back on a serious question to invoking the Hatch Act. This woman is so full of crap and so bad and so unqualified. But again, she is the first black lesbian to hold the position. That's all that matters to the left and especially to this administration. All right, Steve Malzberg, one final short segment left in the hour. Don't go away. We're here, of course, on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Oh, how sweet it is. The great one Jackie Gleason's favorite tagline is ever so appropriate to describe Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's plight after it came to light that he withheld over 600 pages of exculpatory evidence from the Manhattan grand jury impaneled to indict President Donald Trump. Withholding exculpatory evidence is a serious breach of legal ethics. I predicted that this political persecution, which was declined by the Federal Election Commission, by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, by the New York State Attorney General, would come back to bite Alvin in the arse. And sure enough, it looks like it might lead to his disbarment. And away we go. From MAGAinstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought all the people that I knew who didn't drink were self-righteous people, holier than thou. So it never occurred to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was filled with people who had drank like I did, and now were the same people that I used to drink with. The same people that I liked, only now they weren't drinking. They were people just like me who had been drinking for a long time and found out that it didn't work for them anymore.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
If you're talking about it,
cuts to Medicare and Social Security, they're off the table.
We're talking about
today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, we are back. So I want you to, in the time we have left, and okay, we should be able to get these in. PBS has, there's a video out there. And it's Dr. Anthony Fauci. You may have heard of Dr. Anthony Fauci. Yes, I think it's possible that you that you have. And there's this video. They PBS followed Fauci around back in 2021 with the mayor of Washington, D.C., Mayor Bowser. And they were trying to sell people to get the COVID vaccine. And it didn't go so well. Here is one tenet. This isn't a very predominantly, mostly overwhelmingly, almost all black neighborhood in D.C. And this guy, and he wasn't alone, but this guy was very well versed, and he wasn't having any of this vaccine talk. Again, this is 2021. This is from PBS. Here's 259.
The people in America are not settled with the information that's been given to us right now.
So I'm not gonna be lining up taking a shot or a vaccination for something
that wasn't clear in the first place. And then you all create a shot in miraculous time. It takes years to create vaccination.
Well, it used to take years.
Okay, it used to.
You know how many years were invested in this approach? About 20 years of science to get us to be able to do it.
20 years is not enough. And 9 months is definitely not enough for nobody to be taking no vaccination that you all came up with.
The only reason I'm talking to you right now, as close as we are, is that I've been vaccinated.
Right.
But if it allows thousands of people like you don't get vaccinated, you're going to let this virus continue to percolate in this country and in this world.
Something like the common flu then, right?
And not like, not
it's
like
much
the
more serious
flu.
Than the flu. Though.
Well, the flu kills a lot of people.
Yeah. And then Fauci went on to say, I think, 35,000 people in 2020 or whatever, or before that died of the flu. He says this year, or maybe that was 19. He said last year, hardly any. It wasn't it amazing when COVID was killing people, a lot of people, and during the height of the pandemic, that all of a sudden nobody was dying of the flu? It just went away. Okay. So here, this guy continues. Eventually, they walk away from him, but he doesn't stop. This is cut 260.
You know how many people have died from COVID-19 in the United States? 600,000 Americans.
The number that you all given that died, that's once again, that's you all's number.
You gonna pass.
Yeah, definitely. When you start talking about paying people to get vaccinated, when you start talking about incentivizing things to get people vaccinated, there's something else going on with that.
It is something going on with that. You're right. But I'm glad millions of people like me and most everybody here didn't get an incentive. You know what their incentive was? Protecting their health and protecting the city. I won't keep you anymore.
It's okay, because my incentive, y'all, campaign is about fear. It's about inciting fear in people. You all attack people with fear. That's what this pandemic is. It's a fear. It's fear, this pandemic. That's all it is.
Yeah, but you see, and it's interesting. Good for that guy. I'm not saying I agree with everything he said, but good for him. He was shouting at them as they left because they walked away. They turned their backs on him. That's when he started talking about the fear factor, if you will. Earlier in the PBS clip there, you see Fauci talking to the mayor, Bowser of D.C., about how, Republicans, I'm paraphrasing, Republicans, they're really gonna mess this country up because they're not taking the shot, and they don't like to be told what to do. Well, here you are in this African American community in Washington D.C., and guess what you're hearing? You're hearing a lot of the same thing. You're hearing a lot of people questioning a lot of what you back then in 2021 are telling people. So it's very interesting, the way it was juxtaposed that, right before they knock on a door while they're getting a woman who's coming out of her house, they focus on them talking as like, the middle of the country. And, those people there, they just don't like to be told what to do. You can't tell me what to do. It's going to be bad. It's going to keep the virus going. And then you run into this gentleman and others like him. Who, again, were maybe not as vociferous and maybe not as clear in what they were trying to say and not as informed or didn't think they were as well informed, but same sentiment, basically. Look, when you have to have the mayor of New York, now think about this. The mayor of New York sat on television and said, and if you get your shot, you're going to get a voucher for free French fries. Huh? Free French fries? Well, then give me a shot in each arm. I'll take two vouchers, please. I mean, can you imagine that? Who are you appealing to? Who are you appealing to that you're so desperate that you got to offer free French freaking fries to? I mean, that was a sad moment in our history. That, and you know what we forgot, folks? You know what we've all forgotten? Well, the law certainly has forgotten it. All the dead people in nursing homes in states like New York and Michigan and New Jersey. All the dead people in nursing homes because they put the infected people with COVID into nursing homes and they died. The nursing home residents died. and nobody's ever been held accountable for any of it. Again, didn't happen. They were all Democrat governors and Democrat administrations. So dead seniors, screw them. Didn't happen. All right, folks, tomorrow, God willing, we'll reconvene and we'll see what happens on all the fronts. Tell your enemies, tell your friends. Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.